Welcome to some amazing discussions from the voices of young America. Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. In the next hour, you'll hear from leading women in academics, business, entertainment, and more. Now, here are your hosts.
If we want a better world, we can't depend on a superhero. We have to depend on ourselves. Our guest today has made her life around making the world a better place to live in. And with that, thank you and welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And I'm Claire Hayden.
And we are joined today by Ms. Anu Bardwaj of Women Investing in Women and Andy Lou Hayden of Phoenix Country Day School. And again, our guest today is Mrs. Teal Brown Zimring. Teal, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
We love having you a part of our program. And just to start off the discussion, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Let me think about what is going to be most relevant to tell. I came to my work from honestly a lifetime of experience that led me to be dedicated to the idea that we are responsible and have a responsibility to give of whatever resources we have, be it wit, wisdom, energy, money, to make a better community around ourselves. And I really believe that that came from my father and my mother. My father was a politician. He worked in the post-conflict regions after the breakup of Yugoslavia for the Operation for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And through his work at an early age, I saw, I think, more poverty and more struggle and strife than a lot of my peers. And I saw a world in which hunger was a daily experience. And my mother, who was an artist and a designer and a writer and a hilarious woman who never met a stranger, together they taught me this lesson, which I think has carried me through my work, this sense of responsibility. And I became an actress when I was in my early 20s, and that, quite honestly, the idea was that I would make a lot of money and then give it all away, and I would have a lot of influence. And that would be how I would alleviate poverty and how I would create opportunity for girls like those I met in Bosnia and Croatia. And I had a realization in my early 20s that you do not have to be an actress to do that. So I left and I joined politics. I went to policy school to understand political challenges and build a suite of strategies and a tool to address these. I spent time at the Aspen Institute and saw firsthand how partnerships and big decisions are made and how important relationships are to trust and efficacy. I staffed global executives in elite negotiations, worked at a social enterprise, and spent nights doing the very unsexy tactical implementation of this work, so moving shipments of humanitarian aid through customs, figuring out how to get someone interested in producing short stretch bandages in rural Ethiopia, and these types of implementation challenges. And the point here is that in addition to believing that our responsibility is to use what resources we have to work for the betterment of the world around us, I've also come to understand that an ecosystems level approach, which involves all of the stakeholders in a problem, is the most sustainable solution. And so you have to be cognizant of all of the folks at the table and aware of how to support the entire system that is a part of the social challenge you're seeking to address.
Awesome.
And that's brought me to my work, yeah.
Great. So I want to touch on when you were younger and the influence that your father had on you as you grew up. And I'd love to know, what did he teach you about politics and what did you learn about post-conflict needs?
Oh, fun question. You know, I think that there's a lot of literature out there that talks about the value of family dinner table conversations. And I learned that from probably the age of 3. It's honestly, my earliest memories are my brother and sister debating political challenges at the dinner table. And that really shaped, I think, my sense that even as a young person.
So, Teal, I know you mentioned that your father had a big influence on you growing up, and I'd love to know what he was able to teach you about post-conflict issues and about politics as well.
I really love the question. My family was built around the premise that having a discussion at the dinner table was perhaps the most important part of our day. And I think from the earliest memories that I have are probably my brother pacing around the dining room table and discussing political challenges. And I think that what my father and mother instilled in us from a very early age was a belief that you could have and do have valuable, important opinions about the challenges around you, the political, policy, poverty, and social challenges around you, even when you're 9 years old. So what that taught me is that when you look at conflict and you look at these very complex problems, and we know that as the society gets increasingly complex, the challenges and the solutions then themselves are also increasingly complex. And there's this special thing that happens when you're a kid and complexity becomes quite simple and clear to you. And you're able to poke holes through ideas and through status quo. And I think my dad always cherished that and upheld that and told us that that was a good thing. So I would say that's probably the biggest influence he's had is sort of, you know, if you're going to fail, fail fast. If you have an idea, say it out loud. If you want to have an argument, go have that argument. It's worth having. And if nothing else, you're going to learn from somebody. So that's probably the biggest lesson I took from him.
Awesome. So what did he teach you about politics and post-conflict needs?
That's a tough question. he spent his entire career working in either domestic or global post-conflict settings, and that began during the civil society riots in the 1960s and the protests against Vietnam all the way into the Bosnian and Croatian post-Yugoslavian breakup wars. And so, and then long after that, in fact, into the Eastern European states that broke off from Russia. So, you know, what he taught me about post-conflict is a tough question to answer, but I would say that democracy is not simple, and implementing effective tools for populations that have suffered requires listening to those populations more than anything else, and that if we are able to bring to the table the folks that we're seeking to serve, we will more effectively find solutions that are sustainable. And that was the cornerstone of the work that he was doing with the OSCE. And I think witnessing that has only underscored the sense for me that if you are working to solve a particular problem, you must have at the table the people who are suffering from it, the people who helped to cause it, the people who have institutionalized it, the people who pay for it, and the government which regulates it. And if you don't have each of those pieces of the puzzle, your solution is very unlikely to see it through the long haul and to actually be successful. And I think that's something diplomacy has learned over time and that I learned from his work.
So why did you wish to pursue a career in politics?
Okay, well, I'm going to be totally honest with you. You probably all know who Angelina Jolie is. And when I was a kid, I thought that she had basically figured it out. And this was the gold standard was you can go become famous and you can be a woman and you can be powerful and influential and smart. And then you can do good things for the world because you can show people that your influence and wisdom and smarts can be used for good. In my experience, as an actor, the value of an excellent communication background was huge. But I realized I did not want to be acting. I wanted to communicate. I wanted to speak to people. I wanted to talk about things I cared about, but I didn't want to do it on a television camera or on a stage, and I didn't want to speak someone else's words. I wanted to speak my own. And so going into politics for me was a way to figure out exactly what I was most passionate about, what I wanted to work on, what I wanted to take my analytical skills, mirror and marry with my communication skills. And politics was kind of an obvious avenue. The truth is I didn't have to think about it too hard, and I think a lot of times good choices are easy to make.
Awesome. We are going to continue this conversation after we take a break. Once again, I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And I'm Claire Hayden.
and you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Stay tuned.
Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Join us every week for the Paper Hope Street Team. None of our topics are off the table. This is a program that you can listen to and discuss with your family. From the pages of the Paper Hope blog to the internet radio airwaves, we'll talk about the topics you want to talk about, such as friendship and relationships, or some more controversial issues about sex, drugs, and underage drinking. Join the Paper Hope Street Team live every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Kids channel. Let's talk soon.
Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
We are continuing our conversation with Teal Brown Zimring. And Teal, to start off this section, when we say make the world a better place, that you want to inspire people to make the world a better place as well, what do you mean by this? What should we focus on in making the world better?
What should we focus on? You know, I hesitate to be too focused, but I will say that I think, and I've dedicated my career to, the idea that girls, adolescent girls, may be the greatest resource for social change in the world. And while I don't think that that means that everyone should necessarily focus on adolescent girls, I do think that everyone's focus should include adolescent girls. And not just by circumstance. It should be explicit, it should be called out, and it should be specifically curated for that population. And I do think that that is a very ripe, powerful economic opportunity that's untapped.
Love it. And I also want to know, how long do you believe it will take for us to achieve that level of success for helping girls around the world with that?
Wow. Well, that's an interesting question. So you probably know that in 2011, the global population surpassed 7 billion people,
mm-hmm.
and more than half of those folks are under the age of 30. So a large majority of the young, nearly 90% of them, live in developing countries with limited access to economic opportunity and education. So I think that to answer the question of how long will it take, we have to consider what we are willing to do to underscore, to empower that young generation, because I do believe that among these young people are the next great inventors, artists, politicians, teachers, activists, change makers. And that if we give these people, particularly the girls, economic opportunity and education, they can become powerful proponents of peaceful political change, prosperous economies, strong societies. But to do that, it's a question of what we're willing to do as philanthropists, as private sector entities, as individuals, and as governments to empower these young people. And I think that's a complex question because it involves people who are orphans and don't have parents. It involves people who are suffering from disease and conflict, and there are very real barriers to opportunity. So I would hope that by, you know, within the next, within my lifetime, we see this young portion of the population growing to be my age and older and having the economic opportunity that those girls who are now 40 didn't went when they were younger. And mm-hmm. I would love to say that I think that's true. Do I think that timeline is certain? Absolutely not.
Right. Well, I really do appreciate how you touched on the aspect of what we need to do to get us to that point and overcoming barriers. And I found some statistics that I think are interesting as well, that 842 million people don't have enough to eat, and that more than 875 million women and girls are illiterate. So I'd like to know from you, how do you face the daunting task of trying to find a solutions to these huge obstacles?
Mm. So the ones you mentioned specifically were illiteracy and hunger, and I think these are huge, huge problems. I think that philanthropy is not the only solution, and I think that's an important thing to remember. I also think that governments are not the only solution, and corporations are not the only solution. I think that we have to be prepared to work together toward common objectives, and that if that means understanding the problem from a perspective of how this affects each person that's involved. So, for example, if we're talking about literacy, well, let's talk about hunger, actually. If we're talking about hunger, we're not just talking about how do we get food to the mouths that need the food. We're talking mm-hmm. about how do we create opportunities for those people to be growing their own food, to be eating in such a way that meals are nutrient dense, for governments to be supporting those communities in such a way that there is a sustained and smart tax policy that feeds the government, and then the government can feed that back through social policies that enable the populations to sustain themselves. And it's complicated. It's very complicated. And I think what I view as one very valuable piece of the solution, and again, I'll focus on hunger, is finding ways to be innovative. And lots of social enterprises are doing that. People are being really, really inventive about how to make this work. But I think innovation is also about philanthropy. In philanthropy, we all too often ignore complexities because they're too hard to understand, they're too difficult to address, it feels complicated, and so we revert to aid, or we revert to traditional charitable donations. And I think that cross-sector collaboration is quite simply the only sustainable way to move forward, and that's for all of us, whether it's an individual philanthropist or a large corporation like a Starbucks or a Coca-Cola.
So why do you believe current means of philanthropy aren't working?
Interesting. I think I would hesitate to say that current means of philanthropy aren't working, but I will say that I think there are identifiable problems that we can work to overcome. So, for example, I did some work on the girl effect, and I actually think that this is a good example of a way in which philanthropy can work. A lot of times, large foundations aren't able to release money quickly. And so what happens is a program is moving, it's going, it's happening, and then they hit a roadblock, or there's an opportunity that they can't seize. And large foundations are not capable of releasing money quickly. It's just not how they're built.
Mm-hmm.
Individual donors can. They can give money quickly. They're nimble, they're more flexible, they might be able to be more responsive to a specific need, but they're only going to do it if they know about it and if someone knows how to find them. There are movements in the world like the Girl Effect, like FP 2020, maybe even like the UN Global Cookstove Alliance, where their idea is, let's work together collaboratively in a working group. We'll bring everybody to the table who cares about this. And then when we hit a problem, we will already be a group, a community that works together. Will already be a set of people that you can come to and say, I've hit a roadblock, or there's this opportunity and it's only going to take me $200,000 to get this, to access this opportunity, but mm-hmm. I don't have that, and none of my big donors can release it quickly enough. Well, if you have existing working groups that are brought together under the banner of an objective, like the Girl Effect, the idea is that you can then access what you need to solve the problem quicker.
All right, awesome. And we're going to talk about the Girl Effect later on in the discussion. But I also am interested to know how you were able to get politics on your side of philanthropy. We have threats of terrorism going on. We have war-torn countries just being torn apart by rebels. How do we get philanthropy more attention?
How do we get philanthropy more attention? I think those issues are not separate from one another, although you bring up a very good point that with conflict and death on the front of the newspaper every day, aid, charitable contributions, and philanthropy are not, they're not sexy topics. We don't like to talk about them, at least not on the front page of the newspaper.
Right.
But the reason I say that they're not separate, I think, yeah, and I think you're absolutely right about that, but the reason I think that they're not separate is that when we look at, you just brought up conflict, so when we look at Syria, for example, there's a whole lot of Syrians living in Jordan right now. They're living in refugee camps. Inside those refugee camps, there are great atrocities happening. The rate of child marriage is increasing. Girls are increasingly being sold for sex or labor trafficking.
Right.
And the reason for that is often because the families are desperate and that's a source of income,
mm-hmm.
is to do that. So philanthropy enters that problem when that issue becomes so significant that either the Jordanian government or the refugee camps or the global governments and the multilateral groups like the UN are looking at the Syrian conflict and saying, we can't solve this problem unless we look at the root causes. And philanthropy has been looking at the root causes from day one.
Right.
So I think advocacy with politicians comes into play when you say, for example, okay, you want to achieve a peaceful transition out of the refugee camps, then you need to work with me to create a world in which selling of young girls for sex and labor trafficking and marriage is not acceptable, because that's going to help you reach your political objective.
Right.
But I think working in politics from a philanthropic perspective is all about identifying what the political motivations are and then helping them understand the ways in which your work is necessary for them to achieve those objectives.
Awesome. And we're going to leave it at that for right now. We are going to take one more break. We want to hear from all of our listeners out there at facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, #womeninvest, #girlsinvest, or #thegirleffect. Once again, I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And I'm Claire Hayden.
And you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Stay tuned.
Ready to explore the amazing world under the sea? Your host is a certified scuba diver, explorer. He likes to cook, and most of all, he's just a kid like you. You'll find out a lot more lies under the sea than what you've seen on TV, in movies, and even in aquatic parks. You'll learn about all kinds of fish, as well as other sea creatures. We'll take you to some exotic destinations and so much more. There's a whole big world under sea just waiting to be discovered. Tune in to Under the Sea, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Kids.
Sometimes we may sound strange, but remember, we're just kids with opinions. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
There's so much going on in the tech field. The tech team is here to sort it all out so that you know exactly what you need to get and what you should avoid. In this age of cell phones and text messaging and new discoveries every single day, you need to be informed. We'll bring you previews of new products, technology news, and help you make the right decision when you are out there buying that new MP3 player, cell phone, or mobile device. Don't do a thing until you've tuned in to the Tech Team. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids.
Looking for an on-air community where teens talk and the world listens? Tune in to Express Yourself, an entertaining adolescent fusion radio program where passion and possibility populate the airwaves. Our vivacious teen hosts and star-studded field reporters from around the country offer stimulating segments and invigorating viewpoints connecting with the world campus of young people. We'll talk with cool celebrities, exhilarating experts, and tenacious teens with experience. Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids. Express yourself. What do you want to do? Are you interested in the performing arts? If so, make sure you tune in to the Angel and Harmony Show. Angel and Harmony have experience singing, acting, and performing in general, and want to help you live out your dreams of the future. Whether you are interested in acting, modeling, dancing, or singing, this is the show for you. We'll even give you the scoop on being behind the scenes if you're a little shy. The Angel and Harmony Show is heard live every Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk radio.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at hashtag Women Invest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and I'm Kim Hayden. And we are joined today by Anu Bardwaj of Women Investing in Women and Andy Lou Hayden of Phoenix Community School. And just continuing on our conversation with Mrs. Teal Brown Zimring. So, Teal, can you tell us about the girl effect and your involvement in it?
The girl effect, sure. The girl effect is one of the sort of groundbreaking, I think, initiatives that a few other organizations have done similar things across different topics. What's groundbreaking about the girl effect is that the Nike Foundation came to the Girl Effect with the idea that they wanted first and foremost to understand their assets, their unique resources that they could bring to solving a problem.
Awesome.
And the unique resource that they most centrally identified was brand, marketing, a convening power, a place to bring people together. And so the concept of the Girl Effect, which was born of the Novo Foundation, the Nike Foundation, and the UN Foundation, among a number of others, the Coalition for Adolescent Girls as well. The idea was, let's be a center for convening, and let's start a movement. And the concept of starting a movement in solving a global social problem had been addressed by folks like Bono, the Red Campaign, and other programs like that, which come to all of our minds. What the Girl Effect did a little bit differently, a lot bit differently, was look at the foregone, look at the data. Look at what it is that has actually caused us, what has happened to our economies, what will happen to our economies if we fail to empower young girls. And that data became the driving force coupled with the marketing power of these remarkable foundations, became the driving force for launching this movement. And one of the things that I think is important to sort of just to talk about the issue itself and why the Girl Effect was created, not just the innovative way in which it was created. It was created because 250 million adolescent girls live in poverty, and we know a couple of things about girls. We know that girls are the most unique resource among young people in that there are both more of them. They tend to make decisions that are allocating more toward education, fewer children, sustainable families, and a leadership that is sustainable and prosperous for the communities in which they participate. So we know these things about girls, and we also know that there are about $10 billion in lost economic potential every year in India due simply to adolescent pregnancy. Now, that's just India, and that's just adolescent pregnancy. And those girls did not necessarily want to be pregnant. So imagine if we gave girls the choice to achieve their potential rather than failing to do that. So this was the data that drove the Girl Effect to come together. Those were the foundations that came together, and the idea was what we know we have is marketing, brand, and convening power. What we didn't have, and this is where I came into the project, was the voices. We didn't actually know yet what the girls themselves wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the Nike Foundation's efforts as a consultant when they were in the process of gathering a global study interviewing girls aged 12 to 17 in urban and rural areas to understand if you were to speak with best you could, what would be the outcomes? What would they ask for? What would they say are the problems? And can we use that data, that information, to further bring people together, to include adolescent girls in all of our policy agendas, to include measurements about adolescent girls in all of our Millennium Development Goals and all of our corporate philanthropy? And that's where we came to the table. And I think the Girl Effect has been uniquely successful. It was a sort of viral video, and it used interesting technologies, things that actually adolescent girls wanted to talk about and wanted to think about. And that's the sort of the big picture. They've since done quite a bit of programming in which I've also been fortunate enough to be involved. But that's the big picture.
Awesome. And Teal, could you tell us a little bit about where the Girl Effect is in its campaign at this time? Is it still building, or have they reached a plateau? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's happening with it?
Sure. And I should say I don't work with the Girl Effect at present, but I am still a advocate and friend of the group and a champion of the group. Where are they at present? So the Girl Effect is still very much growing. The most recent iteration, the most recent big push, which was honestly really remarkable, and it gives me chills to think about it, was the creation of what was called the Girl Declaration. And we took a team of really smart people, took the words from these girls from the study and turned it into a actionable policy strategy for the United Nations and other development agencies, and partnered with the World Bank to come up with metrics and ways to measure and evaluate how we were or were not achieving that policy agenda. And that agenda was then given to the United Nations last fall at what's called the UN, the global meeting, so it's UNGA, and they are proposing the Girl Effect, and all of its folks that now make up the Girl Effect are proposing that this become a part of the what are called the Sustainable Development Goals, or the post-2015 agenda, which is a United Nations jargon for what should we do globally to make things better. So that was the last piece of it. Now, the part that gives me chills is the use of that policy agenda to create what is quite literally a poem, a beautiful, beautiful poem. Using girls' words, girls' drawings from all over the world, And at the announcement of the declaration last year, the Nike Foundation was able to bring, alongside Plan International, two young ladies from Pakistan and from Nigeria who stood on stage at the Clinton Global Initiative and spoke this poem, spoke this declaration. And I think and I hope that this translates into a concrete, achievable agenda on the post-2015 Sustainable Development Goals, the What Should We Do agenda. And I think and I hope that hearing those young girls claim their moment in time and demand that they be supported is something that only grows.
Great, thank you. And we have just a little bit of time left, but I want to point out that there are some major, major entities that are involved in the Girl Effect and helping achieve success. Like you mentioned, Nike Foundation, UN Foundation, some really, really big, important players. So what is the importance of collaboration in achieving these goals?
Yeah, I think the importance of collaboration cannot be overstated. And I've said earlier as well that I think integrated approaches where everybody's at the table are truly the only way to create sustainable change. With the Girl Effect, what they did was say, here's a movement, we need to create it, here's the data, but we know we don't know everything. So if Nike brings the brand power, if the UN Foundation brings the UN power, then who brings the data? Who brings the writing ability? Who brings the publishing outlets? Who brings the actual programmatic technical expertise? And how do we bring all those people to the table so that we all own something? And there's two things that I think are important about that. One, it's the only way to make sure that you're not running over the lessons learned before you, which is a mistake we all too often make.
Mm-hmm.
And two, if one organization owns something, then if that one organization loses course, loses money, changes their mind, there's no fail-safe. In this scenario, you've got 20-plus dedicated organizations operating as a working group that own the Girl Effect, and they are all jointly responsible for the success of the initiative. So I think in that case, joint responsibility coupled with deep and sort of humble knowledge of what's come before them is what will make them successful.
Great. So Teal, can you could you name the 20 working groups, as many as you can, real quick?
That was a good question. Let's see. Novo Foundation, UN Foundation, the Nike Foundation, Plan International, the Coalition for Adolescent Girls, who else? World YWCA, and I'm sure that there are many more, but I would honestly have to go back to a list to find out. I know DFID has been central, which is the British Development Agency, and UK Aid, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation CARE, absolutely. Futures Without Violence, which is a San Francisco-based group that is absolutely remarkable, working on female genital mutilation, among other things. The Global Fund for Women, Mercy Corps, Landesa, which is an interesting organization working on giving women the legal right to own land, which gives them the economic opportunity to pursue goals and perhaps even entrepreneurship. Population Services International, Save the Children, really remarkable organizations out there, UN Women in Uniform, of course. Tostan, if you don't know their work, I think is a remarkable group based in West Africa that has used a integrated approach to get imams from the Muslim community to support ending female genital mutilation as a practice, and have the imams lobby to the existing government structure that this should happen. And they essentially harness the power of religion to create political change.
Great.
And it's a remarkable thing.
Great. Thank you so much. We are going to take another break. You are listening to Women Investing, Women and Girls. Stay tuned.
What about the world concerns you? Is it future success? Is it world issues? Are you just looking to change the world in general? Tune in to What Up World. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, or what you look like. Everyone is entitled to the same chance for success. Follow your dreams. Move forward. Make a difference. Tune in to What Up World every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at hashtag Women Invest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I am your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And I'm Claire Hayden.
And we are continuing our conversation once again. We are joined with Anu Bardwaj of Women Investing in Women and Claire Hayden. And Andy Lou Hayden as well. And Teal, for the last part, you do have some upcoming projects that you mentioned. So would you like to elaborate on some of those?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. You know, so I have recently, with my partner, who's a remarkable woman named Celeste Eckerman, launched a small advisory practice. And we are working with individual philanthropists and private and nonprofit sector leaders to help them make a bigger impact in the world around them. I think that we have a few clients right now, but one that might be actually quite pertinent to our discussion is, our clients are high net worth individuals who are looking to make high impact philanthropic investments. Mm-hmm. And social entrepreneurs who think their work can be a force for positive change. And we're also working with foundations and corporations who want to harness their elite thought leaders and networks and donors to raise the volume on their work into a movement. So we talked about the girl effect. People want to create movements like that. So we're working on those things, partnerships and communication for impact, with impact as the sort of unequivocal bottom line. Velveteen is a clothing group they're based in Hong Kong. They make children's clothes, baby's clothes, and clothes for little girls. And you may have read the story, The Velveteen Rabbit, when you were a kid. It's like that, Velveteen. And I don't know if you know this, but when a lot of our clothes are made, there's a lot of waste. So, for example, a pattern or a type of textile will be owned by a high fashion brand, and after the dresses are made or whatever's made, that fabric is then thrown away. It's just wasted. It's just thrown away because they don't want it to get out necessarily into the world and be used for other things because they own that fabric. Well, what if we created a world in which there was a secondary supply chain where scrap fabrics are being used to create clothing and materials for people who need them and can't afford the higher end products?
Right.
Some companies are thinking about this. The founder of Velveteen is thinking about it specifically in India, within the context of trying to bring in women who are not currently making textiles and bring them into the manufacturing, help them be part of the puzzle, help them use the scrap fabrics for their own small businesses. And we're very early stages thinking about how to do this, who the right partners are, how we're going to talk about it, how we're going to get it done. But I will say it's a very exciting project.
Great.
So why do you do what you do?
Why do I do what I do? Someone who, I think I mentioned this earlier on, I truly believe that if you can, then you must. And if you have a knowledge of things around you that you think can be better, then you may not have a lot of resources at your fingertips. You may not make a lot of money. You may be in a position where you're isolated, but you do have some resources. And I'm fortunate. I have quite a lot of resources. I have people that I've worked with, smart people that I know, the opportunity to work on global programs, and the education to be helpful, I hope. I think that it's that simple. I think that if you know there are things that can be better, and you believe you have an idea about how to make them better, then you have to go do that work.
Great, great. And we always ask this question to all of our guests, and I would like to know from you what investing in women and girls means to you.
I love it. So I'm happy to answer that question, because I think women investing in women and girls is a remarkable organization. And I think the concept of investing in women and girls is not just about money.
Right.
It's not just about smiles. It's not just about hugs. It's not just about literature or partnerships. It's about giving of yourself in order to uplift a world of people who can help make our societies more prosperous. And it's about believing that investing in women and girls around you, that kind of, I think, you know, sort of honoring the people that have brought you where you are, which is your mothers and your daughters and your sisters, is absolutely vital to your own success emotionally and in your career.
Great.
So, Teal, we have Andy Lou Hayden with us today, who is 13 years old, and she's with Phoenix Country Day School, and she was observing.
Hi, Andy.
Hi.
And I wanted her to give her thoughts on today's interview and what she's learned about the girl effect and what she takes away from this.
I've learned so much.
What was your impression of the show today?
I think it's very interesting of how, like, you can, I don't know what to say.
Say from your heart.
Anyway.
Speak from your heart.
So I think, like, if you look at it from a perspective that we aren't always taught these things, they don't teach these concepts at school. And a lot of the times people go on without through their life when they're young girls, and they don't have the knowledge that they need in order to be successful in life. So what are some things that maybe you picked up, that what are some things that you think are important to have as you grow up that they don't teach you in school?
This is a whole new perspective you're learning about.
Like, it's scary to think about, like, a girl your age is going through so much when you haven't really known about it. You want to talk about that?
Being exposed.
Just be like, yeah.
Like, were you aware of these statistics that we were talking about?
No.
Just be like, I wasn't aware of these statistics. Yeah, there you go.
Go on.
No, I was never taught any of this at school, because we kind of learn about our own society in, like, America. We never taught anything outside of women leadership.
I think that it's important because Anu, your daughter Arya, she's exposed to so much in this world, and she is friends with people from around the world, and she thinks that her plane is her second home. And a lot of us in America, like Andy Lou was saying, we only learn about what's going on in America.
U.S. history.
Right. We don't know what's going on in the world. We don't like to listen to the news because, I mean, to be honest, it's
depressing.
Scary. We don't like it. So to hear from people who have a global perspective and are involved in projects across borders, you learn things that you don't learn from a textbook or from your teacher. And sometimes you don't even learn it from your close relatives or friends. It's just not there. So I think to have this opportunity to listen to people who have had those experiences and to be saying that this is what we're doing, how does that make you feel to be part of a generation where we're actually making change? Does it feel good?
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely feels good. I think it's great to know that our generation, Claire, Andy Lou, and my generation are going to see some incredible things. And for right now, we do want to hear from all of our listeners as well. Go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, #womeninvest and #girlsinvest and #thegirleffect. Teal, thank you so much for being a part of our program. As you
thank
can you. See by Andy Lou, this has been a huge impact on our life and on our generation. So thank you.
So it's awesome to chat with you guys, and thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, and thank you to our listeners for listening as well. You've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Once again, I am your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And I'm Claire Hayden.
This show is produced by KidStar for the Voice America Kids Network. KidStar Radio, we empower kids.
Thank you for joining us today. Your hosts will be back next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, for another edition of Women Investing in Women and Girls on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll talk then.
From Phoenix, Arizona, and host of Bookworm. The KidStar album of the month this month is Back in School, Neil Brewer and Friends. Let's listen to Three Kids in the Car.
Three kids in the car on a Monday morning, each one wishing that the others weren't born. And I can't say nothing because they've all been scorned because their mother's done had enough. And the sister's sitting in the front seat, who at this part of the song you need to realize is about 3 months away from getting her driver's license. She's thinking to herself, I can't believe that I'm still riding with them. I hope that we're not seen by some of my friends. And if by chance I fail the driver's exam, then I am running away. Three kids in a car on a Monday morning, each one wishing that the others weren't born. And I can't say nothing because they've all been scorned because their mother's done had enough. Brothers sitting behind her, who at this point of the song you need to realize is about 5 years younger than she is, but he's still about 2 years older than his little brother sitting next to him. He glares down at his little brother and he's thinking to himself, I can't wait till our sister's finally gone. Then I'll sit up front cause that's where I belong. And I'll be rid of you, you miserable worm. Why don't you just run away? Three kids in a car on a Monday morning, each one wishing that the others weren't born. They can't say nothing because they've all been scorned because their mother's done bad enough. And the little brother, who at this point of the song you need to realize is a whole lot smarter than the other two think he is. He glares back up at his big brother and he's thinking to himself, I know that there's nobody back in the trunk. Try to scare me with all that junk. I hope you read my mind, I think you're a skunk. And guess what, I'm not running away. Three kids in a car on a Monday morning, each one wishing that the others weren't born. And they can't say nothing because they've all been scorned because their mother's done had enough. And the mother who's been driving all this time, she's thinking to herself, things that I'd better not say. So we'll just pretend that she's thinking, oh, what a beautiful day.
The KidStar album of the month is Back in School by Neil Brewer and Friends. All musical proceeds Neil Brewer and Friends received are donated to the Harvard Stem Cell Institute to put an end to muscular dystrophy. For more information, go to the KidStar website, www.kidstar.org.